You're listening to SBS News.
Wow.
We're on your side. If you have a go, you'll get a go.
Better hospitals over bigger banks.
Wow.
The insurgents were not rewarded.
We've lost the Prime Minister, but there is still a government to save.
I know you miss me. I know you want me back.
You're an international embarrassment.
Mr. Speaker, it's like Game of Thrones, but without all the good bits.
I think it's a joke. I know. Ooh. Careful there, honey.
It's all a big mess of dogs droppings. Unless someone gets a shovel out.
See ya.
Hello, I'm Brett Mason in the gallery for SBS World News. This week, an exclusive interview with the Nobel Peace Prize winning former president of Timor-Leste. José Ramos Horta has a message for Australia on asylum policy, foreign aid, and why he believes Donald Trump's style of nationalism is ultimately destined to fail. Mr. President, welcome back to Australia and to SBS. We've heard a lot recently about Chinese influence in Australia's backyard. Does that really exist?
The Chinese are buying much, much more in Australia, including renting for 100 years the Darwin strategic port, which was coveted during World War II by the Japanese. So we are surprised that Australians are talking about growing Chinese influence in Timor-Leste, when in Timor-Leste everyone worried about the incredible Chinese expansion in Australia, in every area. For us, in Timor-Leste is minor. We have only three buildings put up by the Chinese. We bought with our own money some petrol boats from China. They are not even working. Was poor purchase by our government. We hardly have any loan with China from Chinese banks, very minor, maybe like $50 million. And also we have a far bigger trade relations with, number one, with Indonesia, number two, with Australia. With China, is still very small. So we are surprised when we have heard this, but we are very surprised.
Why do you think China is giving so many loans and building so many buildings in the Pacific and in Asia more generally? What do you think their motivation is, and should our countries be concerned about that?
That has to do with its growing global financial economic clout.
That is sort of understandable, investing in other big economies. But why would China give loans to smaller countries, knowing that those countries will struggle to repay that debt? We're talking about some of your smaller neighbours, some of Australia's smaller neighbours. It seems quite deliberate. It seems quite sinister.
Oh, I wouldn't say sinister. They have enough money, and they are prepared to take risks, like so many Western banks took risks in the past. Like, why the financial economic meltdown of 2008, 2009 in the US, UK? Irresponsible, reckless loans by the big American and European banks. The Chinese, if anything, they are doing the same mistake domestically. They are overlending, and internationally. So if countries default, or domestically they default, it's going to be a bigger meltdown than the 2008-2009 financial crisis. In terms of the concerns of Australia and others of Chinese buying influence, it is normal, but let me say, these countries, the Pacific Islands, they are not interested in playing the big power, regional power games, Australia versus China or vice versa. They are interested in their own development. They are interested in well-being of their people. And whoever can offer them a better condition, they will take it. So if Australia, you know, were to, with transparency for everybody to see, local people, Australian to see, and in real investment that changed the lives of the people in the Pacific and in Timor-Leste and in Asia, well, obviously we would welcome more Australian aid. But the reality is that the Liberal Conservative government in Australia over the years have literally emasculated ODA, Overseas Development System, the Overseas Development Budget. So Timor, I have to say, we have not suffered from that. Australia has been very solid on Timor-Leste, but overall, Australian NGOs and many others, development partners of Australia, complain about the draconian cuts that have been made on Australian overseas assistance.
What sort of an impact have those cuts had? You talked there about China coming in over the top and offering more money. That opens the door for influence to be effectively bought. But for countries that have relied on that ODA from Australia, to have that money removed, what impact does that have?
Immediate impact is definitely it impact negatively on the living condition, the well-being of the people, the poorest, but also impact on the functions of the government, because many of these governments, they depend on direct budget assistance to cover the core cost of running these countries in the Pacific. And if they are not able to, they go where they can obtain either grants or soft loans, and that is today is China, and no other major power in the world, not even the Europeans, are doing that. European Union remain committed to the Pacific Islands. I know the European Union well. They remain committed, but they alone cannot do much because they are very far away. Australia is a regional power in the neighborhood. Australia, it's in our interest, but also for humanitarian reasons, compassionate reasons, should support more the people in this vicinity. And that includes Timor-Leste.
You talk about them being draconian cuts, but doesn't Australia have a right to look at how that money is being spent? For example, in your country, 4 in 10 people still live below poverty. Half of all aid projects, the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade says, aren't meeting the level of completion they were hoping for. I mean, the money isn't perhaps being spent as wisely as it could be.
No, let me clarify this. It is an absolute nonsense, misleading for countries like Australia or the Europeans or Japan to say that the so-called development assistance that they provide to countries like Timor-Leste is our exclusive responsibility to manage. You have two categories of assistance. One is direct budget support, which is minimum, in our case, nothing. We are 100% self-sufficient in budgetary needs. What we get from Australia and few other countries is program assistance, development assistance that is managed primarily by the donor country itself. So Australia, like many other countries, not only in relation to Timor-Leste, but to so many other countries, spend more on itself than in the country. For instance, how it spent. When Australia, they say, we are allocating $10 million to Timor-Leste. Well, there is an Australian bureaucracy that is paid out of this money. There are studies after studies that are paid out of this money. There are trips, evaluations paid out. So they pay out a lot to the consultants. Australian aid money, like many other monies, is spent more on Australia itself than in East Timor. And that is the myth the fallacies of ODA. That's why 50 years of ODA, whether in Timor-Leste or in Africa, have resulted in very little elevating, progressing the lives of the people in the so-called developing countries, because you are not spending the money in our countries, you are spending on our countries through endless reports, endless studies, junkets.
I guess the government would say that those trips are to have accountability around where the money is being spent, but the system you're describing sounds like it's a broken one. How in your eyes do you fix it?
No more than 10% of the budget allocated should be spent on Australians themselves. Timor-Leste and Australia should look at elevating this relationship to what I call in the formal diplomatic language a comprehensive strategic partnership agreement that would increase Australian development assistance many times over, that Australia would bring to Australia hundreds of Timorese to study. Australia should open doors to at least 1,000 or more Timorese guest workers to help in Australian industries.
We've seen Vietnam this year enhance to a strategic diplomatic partnership. Do you think that East Timor has waited long enough for the same recognition?
We still have an only symbolic partnership with Australia, New Zealand, but Australia already having this elevated strategic partnership with one of the few communist regimes, totalitarian, one-party system in the region and in the world. It's Laos. So when is Australia waiting? It's waiting to see when China gaining more influence in Timor-Leste, more presence, then wake up, maybe too late. The sooner the better. If not, please do not keep talking to us about Chinese influence.
You touched on the big sticking point in the diplomatic relationship, and that was earlier this year in March. The permanent maritime boundary was agreed and signed off in New York by our former foreign minister. How are relations between our two countries since then? Have things improved dramatically?
Before agreement on a maritime boundary, that sounds a bit hollow. But today, Australia can speak with credibility.
We know that witness K and his lawyer, Bernard Collery, are being prosecuted as a result of the bugging of the cabinet rooms in East Timor being made public. What do you say to the new Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, about that case, and in particular the prosecution of witness K and his lawyer?
I would appeal to the Australian side that Bernard Collery himself, he was not an intelligence officer. Witness K, yes. But it is a particular situation that did not at all impact on Australia's national security. It was not a national security issue. It was a matter of ethics, of morality, that Australia was using aid money to plant bugs in government offices of one of the poorest countries in the world, of a country that shed lives for Australia during World War II. Please drop the case and let our two friends live on without harassment, without fear.
And if that doesn't happen and the case proceeds as it has, do you think that that threatens the relationship between East Timor and Australia?
No, I wouldn't say that, but it would always leave a bitter taste in our mouth. We would think differently from Australia. Ironically, Witness K and the Bernard Collery, they contributed to this elevation, this improvement, significant improvement of Australia's standing in Timor-Leste, in the region, and in the world. If it were not for the action of Witness K, maybe Australia would not have had the incentive to negotiate the maritime boundary.
You talk about having a good relationship with former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull. Is it fair to say that he was well-liked in Asia and the Pacific as a Prime Minister?
One day we will send some members of our experts of national reconciliation to come to Australia to mediate among within the Liberal National Party, within Labour Party. We will help you, help the Australian political leaders to reconcile. And so,
I spoke to Scott Morrison about this very issue, and he said to me, you cannot negotiate on any level Australia's borders. If you allow those children to leave Nauru, the people smugglers will begin the next day and it will open the floodgates of Australia's borders. Do you believe that's true, that by resettling these 50 children and their families, that that will be the result? Or do you think that you can achieve both strong borders and also the humanity in this situation?
Australian government treatment of refugees is just abominable. This is such a vast continent, empty. Why are you still keeping those poor children, women in Nauru and in Papua New Guinea? Why don't find a more dignified processing center in Australia itself? I understand Australia has to be firm in dealing with people smuggling, because there are organized crime in Asia that swindle people. But to do that, you don't dump people in Nauru or in Papua New Guinea. Look at some other ways. I know it's not easier said than done. War, conflict, and extreme poverty. Failure of foreign aid.
You mentioned Angela Merkel. It's an interesting example because she was widely praised at the time for allowing all of those refugees to go safely into Germany. Fast forward several years, and she's now fighting for her political life. That had a huge political cost for her and her party, the CDU. When you look around the world and you see President Trump talking about America first, we see Australia retreating from its neighbours in terms of aid. Do you worry about this nationalistic mentality that we're seeing spread across the region and the world?
Populist, nationalistic mentality, in the end, will be exposed.
Why are you so confident of that? Because a lot of people aren't. They worry.
Yeah, the simplicity of the solutions they talk about. Look at what Donald Trump is doing. Look at his popularity. We will see in a few days' time the midterm elections. There's a lot of the deception on the part of the U.S. administration. President Trump is incredibly a good manipulator of public opinion. He's extraordinarily good, sophisticated with social media. All the rest are amateurs compared with him. But you can only win, lie to people up to a certain point. They are not all stupid, and slowly your false promises, lies are exposed, and people get angry. And this has happened through history, both left and right. The extreme right has, I would say, very short lifespan. A few years from now, you will see a complete reversal of the surge of right in Europe. They will be in retreat again, because people, they don't offer real, sustainable, intelligent answers to the problems of the society. Lead our people, lead the people who are led through more informed and compassionate approach to resolving problems, and not with easy demagogy, populism. That is not a solution at all.
Just finally, Scott Morrison, our Prime Minister, will meet with President Trump for the first time later this year. What message do you think he should deliver the President, not only on behalf of Australia, but also our neighbours, including East Timor?
His views are abundantly clear and known. I know much, much less of the views of Prime Minister Morrison. So I don't know whether Prime Minister Morrison will be the person who will articulate mine and the concerns of many others in Australia, in the region, because he probably shares the views of Donald Trump. For instance, how can I ask Prime Minister Morrison, please talk to Donald Trump about being more compassionate towards Latinos, towards Mexicans, and others, be more respectful of blacks, of Muslims, because it is the tirades of President Trump against Muslims, against blacks, Africans, against Mexicans, that has contributed significantly to the surge of violence in the United States, including against Jews. In Europe, President Trump also is directly responsible for instigating the hostility towards Muslims, how violence has increased in the UK. So I don't know whether I would have any positive message to send to President Trump. And I'm speaking in my individual capacity. The views are mine and mine alone.
Thank you very much for your time, and we hope you enjoy your time in Sydney.
Thank you. I will enjoy. I'm enjoying already.
SBS acknowledges the Ngunnawal people, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which the Australian Parliament sits and where this program was recorded. We pay respect to the elders of the Ngunnawal Nation, both past and present.
If you enjoyed this, you can find more SBS features on our website or from your favourite podcaster like iTunes, Spotify, Acast, Stitcher, or Wooshka.